Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the Friday Filibuster.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Friday Filibuster. I'm Judge David Johnson. Returned after a week away. Thanks to Judge Mac McIntyre for taking the reins. Mac, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Not too bad. And Judge Eric Asperslager.
I am also doing well.
I didn't ask.
I know, but I thought, but I was, never mind.
It's okay, but we are glad you're doing well.
No, sure. Obviously you're not.
I am. In fact, I'm going to give you this a portion of the time right now to explain why you're doing well. Go.
I don't know. I don't know that I don't know that I'm doing well. I mean,
really?
I guess I'm doing okay. I'm doing better today. I have to say, now that you asked, if you're going to ask.
Were you not doing well recently?
Well, Monday was kind of a weird day. Woke up Monday, was getting ready to take my daughter to daycare, you know. Got in the car, started pulling out of the driveway. It seemed like the car was handling a little weird. Got out of the driveway, realized something was wrong, got out, and one of my tires was flat. So I had to deal with that.
Oof.
Yeah, that was tough.
Okay, expound on had to deal with that.
All right, well, okay, it meant that I had to figure out what to do with my daughter while I was trying to figure out what to do with the tire. Although, actually, my father-in-law just happened to buy pretty randomly, which is very fortunate. So he helped out, and I was able to borrow their car to take her to daycare while I get the tire taken care of. So, you know, they were able to fix it, and so far, so good. So, I mean, really, not that bad in the grand scheme of things.
Had a nice twist ending at the end. I like that.
So I'll go back to my original declaration. I'm doing pretty good.
Okay. All right. Mac, how are you doing okay these days?
Doing okay, yep. Been a busy couple of days in my day job in the news business. We just had an election. I'm glad it's over. I can breathe again. So doing very well.
How was the Halloween coverage in the newspaper?
Oh, it was fine. You know, in my paper, my local town, they had a little parade, and all the kids showed off their costumes. That was fun. Me, personally, I went to Salem again this year and checked out all of the crazy – or tried to check out all the crazy costumes that were going on. It was a little colder this year than it's been in previous years, so a lot of folks had on coats over their costumes. So
lame. Yeah, did you dress up as anything?
Did I? You know, I'm gonna go ahead and plead the fifth on that one.
What?
Oh my goodness!
Come on, we don't fry that much. Then we're gonna have to assign you a costume and make that's what you dressed up as.
Oh, well, we don't want that either.
I'm gonna guess that you are a scary princess.
No, but there was one of those walking around.
Your roller derby dame.
That's good.
No, I don't think I could pull that off. I don't have that. Killer toughness.
Did you go as Castle?
Oh, that'd be awesome. I should have thought of that. I don't have the hair for it, though.
How about Doctor Who?
I did see a Doctor Who there.
Are you sure it wasn't just someone wearing a scarf because it was cold?
No, he was the 11th Doctor with the bow tie.
Ben 10.
You know, I thought about that, but I can't pull off the hair.
So what was it then?
Wore a shirt that says, "This is my costume" on it.
Okay.
See, that's far better than anything I came up with, and far less scandalous, frankly.
I had no idea. I was trying to think of what could be so provocative that Mac wouldn't want to share. I mean, like Princess Leia and Return of the Jedi, chain to Jabba Hutt.
Well, but that was the thing, because I didn't see that costume there. But if it had been, she would have been wearing a coat over a costume, because, you know, in previous years there had been a lot of, you know, women in, shall we say, slutty costumes.
On Halloween, I can't believe it.
I know, but because it was so cold this year, they were all wearing coats, and I didn't get to see any sluttiness.
When did Halloween transform into the Hepatitis B convention? You know? When did that transformation happen?
I mean, I certainly don't remember that from when I was a kid, but then I guess I was a kid, so
right. You
know, that's true. I wasn't aware. We weren't really running around in the avenues. That would happen,
yeah. No, I wasn't a sexy Gamorrean guard that one year.
Aren't they all?
Although I was a Gamorrean guard one year. So
yeah, the Gamorrean, they're pantsless, I believe.
They were. I only remember the plastic mask with the very small eye holes and the the you know, smock that I wore that came with it.
All of the lead paint and the plastic.
Yeah, did they still have those smock costumes?
Oh, I know what those were. Boy, those were ultra low budget, huh?
Yeah.
Smock.
Yeah.
Yes. The mask and then the smock with the picture of the person you're going after.
Yes. That's right. I must have had a He-Man. I believe I may have had a He-Man.
Sounds about right.
Now, did you guys dispatch any candy to the trick-or-treaters at all?
I did not. Well, we're not really big Halloween people. We will. I mean, I think there'll come a point where we have to care again, but it's been a while since I've cared. So we generally turn off all the lights and pretend we're not home as best as possible. But we were in the kitchen finishing up the dishes, you know, trying to get ready for the, you know, settle down for the night. And all of a sudden we hear this knocking on the sliding glass door off our back porch. No lights are on, mind you, anywhere outside. And these two kids have like wandered around the back of our house, gone up on our dark back porch because they saw our kitchen light on and they were standing there waiting for candy. I gave him candy. I mean,
that's good.
We had some lollipops around because I know, you know, I know nothing else, but I know that, you know, you don't not give someone candy on Halloween because I'm not cleaning egg off the house for a 10-cent lollipop. That's for sure.
Oh, nice. All right. Well, I guess we could move on to what we're here for, which is actually this conversation was a lot better than what we were talking about before I hit record, which was benches, and I'll just leave it at that. So Mac, your entertainment world, what has been living in it recently?
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about Walking Dead.
Oh, definitely. Yes. Let's talk about Walking Dead.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was really good. I was a little uncertain at first. I kind of thought the beginning sections were a little slow moving and just kind of, I don't know, standard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But around once the time that our main character found his horse and went all Clint Eastwood and all the stuff that happened to him after that, I really got into the show after that point.
I was just glad to see Hawkins from Jericho.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But mixing it up again.
Why isn't he a bigger star, man? He should.
He should be. He's the man. He is the man.
But yes.
Yeah, Lenny James. Yeah. I mean, he's a British guy, so maybe he's just trying to crack the American nut. But either way, he does deserve more burn, for sure. What do you think about the, as a purveyor of zombie films, what do you think about the zombies in The Walking Dead, Mac?
I thought they looked pretty good. I mean, well, come on, it's Greg Nicotero. We know how good work he does. And, but yeah, they looked pretty good. They were, you know, icky and decayed, but without being too icky and decayed, you know, so. Mm-hmm. And they had the shambling walk down fairly well, I thought, so.
That's right. Now, Eric, you saw it too?
I did. Yep, I saw it. I don't think I was quite as high on it as everyone else was. I enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed it while I was watching it. But, I mean, at the end, it just sort of felt like, okay, that was a zombie TV show, and I've seen all that stuff before. But, I mean, again, I'm not, like, super into zombies to begin with, so it would have to do something pretty outstanding to make me change that. I don't know. It seemed like, you know, you've seen the guy looking for his family. The horse thing was really cool. I have to say that I agree with Mac from that point on. It turned around, and, you know, to be fair, the first episode of most TV shows are not as good as what follows. So I'm definitely coming back for more. But
unless it's Lost, right?
Yes, well, that's right. Lost started on a high point.
That's true. I did like it a lot, actually. I think I'm just a sucker for they just really seem to capture, like, how awful it would be to wake up in an apocalypse. You know, I mean, I thought that kind of came across. I think there's going to be seeds of probably more interesting things, reminiscent of The Stand, perhaps, and the survivors, you know, the other survivors. You know, that'll be kind of cool to see. What I really liked, which I hadn't seen in a zombie movie, though, maybe someone else has, but you remember when our hero tracks down that torso zombie? You know, and just kind of.
Yeah, that was,
you
know, yeah, I like that.
Taste compassion, you know, and I mean, it was actually a simple, I mean, the zombies were actually kind of sympathetic here, you know. I mean, they're still obviously, I mean, they're still zombies, so they're all just meat, you know, craving meat, and that's about it anyway. And you just got to kind of survive. But that one, you just had to have a little sympathy. Just a little torso, just crawling across the grass, which I thought was a really nicely directed scene. Actually, just this little slime trail behind, you know, and
trail going behind it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think, you know, that was pretty affecting. I thought, you know, and it kind of paints our hero as someone you can root for. So yeah.
Wasn't that cut with the scene where the guy was trying to muster courage?
That's right.
And I thought that was again another nice idea, because it really kind of showed how people deal with this, you know, like I said, this apocalypse. Because, you know, it's not just you, all this bad stuff happens and all of a sudden you become this, you know, badass mercenary who just is killing zombies all the time. I mean, there's got to be a transition. And I thought that story was a little bit interesting so far than what we see from the that kind of band of survivors. Although we only saw them for like, you know, 2 minutes.
Right. And you know they're going to have a lot more to do.
Totally. So. I mean, I think you hit it on the head when you talked about The Stand. I mean, that popped into my head right away. It was like this. If only they'd made The Stand now, maybe it would have been
with that kind of quality.
Yeah, I think it's a very similar kind of idea.
So we'll see. You know, I'll definitely keep tuning in. I just, at the very least, I just love AMC for doing it. You know,
yeah.
I mean, just definitely. Like doing something new and like a straight, you know, so much of a genre show. I mean, I think it obviously had a built-in fan base, so maybe it wasn't that big a risk, and the ratings have been really, really high. So you know, that's pretty good. But I don't know, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, and The Walking Dead. You know, talk about just this eclectic offering. So, and they're all quality shows. So
I think we're really seeing in movies, and I guess now in TV, maybe kind of the reemergence of the genre show or movie. I think studios have been catering to sort of the comic book crowd, or at least their idea of the comic book crowd, for a long time with the, you know, comic book movies. But you're starting to see things that are a little more in line with, I don't know, I would call sort of mainstream geek culture. Not that, like, you know, Batman isn't, but, you know, this is the kind of thing that is much more niche in a way.
Right.
We'll talk a little bit more about that perhaps later. But it seems like a good time for people like us who enjoy this kind of thing.
So yep. It's about every year one of the networks will, you know, put out a big, like, you know, sci-fi or genre show. And, you know, a few hit really
big. V or The Event or something.
Yeah, right. With V, we had The Event. You know, less really big one, I guess, would have to have been Lost, maybe. Although that started out more, it was only slightly sci-fi. Got more sci-fi as it went along. But, yeah, so this year it's AMC's turn with Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm. A very violent show, by the way, for a cable show as well. So, you know, lots of brains exploding and horse intestine gobbling. So, all right, Eric, anything you want to talk about?
I caught a movie, actually a new movie. This is the first time in a long time I've caught a new movie, and only because it happened to be on one of the random HD movie channels we have with our TV package. I saw Gareth Edwards' Monsters. Either of you heard of this movie?
Oh,
I have not.
Is that independent movie?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's a guy and a girl that are trying to, like, get across the country or something.
Yeah, basically. So the whole – I first heard about it because, I mean, the big deal, I guess, for this movie is that the director, the guy – I think he wrote it and directed it, made it for an insanely small budget. I mean, the whole – the story anyway was that, you know, basically he got a group of people together. They hopped in a van, drove across Central America, hopped out, shot scenes without permits, and then he kind of put put it together and made very special effects on his laptop. And the whole movie, he said, or they said, was made for like $15,000. Although it seems like the number may be closer to $500,000, which is still, you know, a pretty small budget for what is essentially a sci-fi slash monster movie. It takes place sort of in the near future. It's 6 years after the space probe has broken up over Mexico and kind of released these extraterrestrials that grew into these, like, 300-foot tall walking squid creatures that basically took over most of Mexico. So they've sealed it off on either end, and it's called the infected zone. And this photojournalist who's kind of covering all this has to take his boss's daughter back from Mexico to the United States, and they end up crossing through this infected zone. And it uses a lot of kind of just atmospheric stuff. They show the monsters more than I thought they would. I thought it was a little bit more of kind of a Jaws thing where it's just suggesting it, and it does that mostly. A lot of it is just you see buildings that have been destroyed, and you see, you know, ships that are hanging up in trees because they've been attacked by the monsters or something, and all these signs that talk about the infected zone. But this guy, you know, put together these monster effects and stuck it in there, and it looks really good. You know, it's not a perfect movie. The love story is a little iffy. But it kind of has a feel of like an indie movie, just with giant squid creatures. And, you know, even just the novelty of seeing someone make what's a low-budget movie that's that kind of compelling. And it's just a nice counterpoint to a lot of the Hollywood stuff. So that was cool.
All right. Let's see. For me, a little TV here. I've been I've watched the first three episodes of Dexter, season 5, for TV Verdict, and that review should be up right now. But obviously, spoilers alert, you know, we pick up.
It's not. Oh, hold on.
Oh, wait a minute.
No, wait. I can take my headphones off for a second.
No, don't worry about it. I'm not going to keep it vague. So big things happen in season 4. Dexter needs to grapple with that. It looks a lot like he's going to be facing and kind of dealing with the idea of guilt and emotions and that kind of thing. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, very
interesting. And it's really started off compelling. And I believe the producers have said there's not going to be one of the big bad killers that he's tracking this year. You know, there's not going to be a Trinity killer or the ice truck killer. So he's already run into a couple of sleazebags for sure. And he's got some pressure on the other side of the law looking at him. Again, I'm only 3 episodes in, but it's still up to snuff of what you expect from Dexter. You know, writing, acting, surprises, plotting, all that stuff. So I've got big hopes for the season. And I know they've already, like, again, 3 episodes in, but they've already set up a bunch of, like, pitfalls for Dexter to fall into. And I don't know how they're going to resolve them. You know, I didn't know how they were going to resolve the Doke stuff from season 2, and I don't know what they're going to do here. But I've got faith in the writers, so...
That's cool.
Far, so good.
I just recently read the 3rd book in the Dexter series.
Way out there, huh?
Yeah, I mean, totally different.
Total change of genre.
It's got nothing to do with the show, at least as far as what I've seen. I mean,
it's got nothing to do with the books that came before it.
No, I mean, I actually listened to a bunch of it on an audiobook, and I think part of it was the guy who was reading it who was kind of a little maybe too goofy for the subject matter. But at times, I kind of felt like I was listening to a Dan Brown novel and not a Dexter. I don't know. Maybe it was just kind of the weird cult stuff. But yeah, and I don't know what they do in later seasons with the kids, but they're going in some weird places in the books.
Right? No, they do not do that.
Okay. All right. Because that seems like it could only work in the books and not in the TV.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Thankfully that they don't. I mean, yeah. Obviously, you know, book 3 becomes supernatural.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, totally.
So. And interesting enough, and again, no spoilers, but book 4, I will say, kind of goes back to like a book 1 type, you know, where that's it's good. More of a straightforward thriller, which is really odd. So
yeah, actually, I just got that out of the library. So
yeah, it keeps you guessing. Yeah, it's still a pretty good read, but they both certainly exist in their own Dexter worlds.
Yeah, the Dexterverse, that's what they call it.
Dexterverse. But anyway, season 5 does look like it's going to have good stuff in store.
Cool.
So anyway, stuff we've got... Speaking of that, we're working on for the sites, Mac.
Yeah, talk about your low-budget thrillers here. I've got these 2 movies, right, to review. They're both about murders being caught on video, right? That's like the gimmick of both of these thrillers. Right? One's called Death Tube. The other one is called Playback. Right? And you know, we love the taglines on the DVD covers.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So. One of them says, log in at your own risk. The other one says, rewind at your own risk.
Now, I'm going to say Death Tube is rewind at your own risk?
Death Tube is log in.
Yeah. Oh, log in, okay.
Oh, is it like YouTube, but with
death? Oh, exactly. Is that what it is? Yeah. Okay.
So I'm hoping that when I put these in, they're not going to be the exact same movie, because it's starting to look like they are.
Cool. All right. Well, you should, like, pair them up into one double feature review.
Yeah, I'm thinking if they're as similar as they look, I might do that.
All right, Eric.
This week I'm reviewing probably the opposite of Mac's low budget movies. I'm reviewing Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's I did not get a chance to see it in the theater. I was really hoping it would come to our cheap theater, and never did. So I was pretty psyched to get it, and it is awesome. I read the series, the comic series, before I saw it, and Edgar Wright's you know, an awesome director, and this seems like it would be a very different kind of movie for him, and it is. But at the same time, there are lots of the Edgar Wright kind of comedic touches, It's just it's visually unlike anything I think I'd ever seen before. I mean, it's full of references, you know, to video games and movies and comic books and stuff, but it never feels too jumbled. It never feels like anything's being shoehorned in. It's just a really kind of fresh movie, and I was sort of afraid that they were going to make it all about. I mean, the general conceit of the story is that this kid Scott Pilgrim, in order to date this girl that he meets, has to fight her 7 evil exes and defeat them all. And I sort of thought, you know, he's taking a six book series and condensing it into one movie, that it would be just fight after fight after fight after fight. But the pacing is, you know, even though it's a pretty quickly paced movie, it never feels like it, you know, moves quicker than it needs to. There's plenty of time for a lot of character development. And I have to say, Michael Cera is probably the best he's ever been in this. I don't know. I wasn't expecting it, but he is really perfect for the part. And then just the actual set itself is just a ton of extras. I think it's like 4 commentaries, like a picture in picture trivia track. There's all this. There's like an hour long making of documentary, and that's like the first of like, you know, 15, 20 things on this disc. It's a massive set. So I think fans are really gonna like it. Now, Mac, you enjoyed the movie, right? When you saw it?
Yeah, I really loved it. I mean, it's kind of divided people. Some people didn't like it, but I just left the theater just with a big old grin on my face. It just it's just a great time at the movies, and I can't wait to see it again.
Yeah, and it is a movie that definitely holds up on rewatching. I've actually watched it twice, and the second time I watched it, I liked it more than the first time. And it's got some like legitimately awesome action scenes. I mean, the fight scenes are really carefully choreographed. The effects are, you know, largely practical. You know, they use stuntmen. I mean, they enhance it with you know, digital effects. But I mean, these are actually people pounding on each other and doing stunts. And it's, you know, it doesn't feel like a, you know, like a James Cameron or George Lucas joint. It feels like something a little more substantial. But it's
so it notoriously did not do well in the box office. Yeah. Why do you think? What scared people off?
I think it's just maybe a little bit like Walking Dead, although zombies are kind of more mainstream. But it probably just didn't look like a movie people wanted to see, although I think they should. It definitely goes for a little bit more of a niche audience. Not that it can't be enjoyed by a wider audience, but if you've, you know, played a lot of video games in the 8-bit era, or if you're familiar with comic books, or if you watch a lot of action movies and fight movies, then you'll get more out of it. There's a lot of little nods and references. I think it's just very different than anything else. And I don't know. I mean, again, it came out the same weekend as Expendables. I don't know that had much to do with it. I think this is probably going to be, not having seen Expendables, but this is probably going to be the movie that stands the test of time more so, just because it's such a it really holds together from beginning to end. You can't say that about a lot of movies. So Mac, I think you'll.
Expendables was fun, but it didn't really have the wow factor that Scott Pilgrim had.
Yeah, I mean, this is a movie that people are going to go back to, I think, for a long time. It's really good, and I think it just kind of, you know, further cements Edgar Wright's status as one of the you know, legitimately great directors that are out there right now. You can just tell that he and everyone else who worked on it just loved what they were doing and had a lot of fun making it. So it's awesome.
All right, very nice. I reviewed, I think I've already talked about this movie, but I did get for review that is Centurion.
Oh, yeah.
The movie that Mac and I were going to try to see forever, but it never made it like within 100 miles of our state. But here it is on Blu-ray. It's just a nice, mean, bloody little action movie. It's Neil Marshall. It's beautifully shot. You know, some great costuming work. It's a familiar conceit, you know, kind of a army gets decimated, the survivors are caught behind enemy lines, and they need to get out of there. So it's, you know, there's that chase factor as well. And it's just cool that the survivors happen to be these badass Romans, and, you know, they're just trying to survive against the Picts, which are, I guess, the Scots or the Brits, or in the land of the murky land of Britain at the time of this. So, but anyway, it's really cool. There's some great action. A couple faces from 300, Dominic West, of course, and Michael Fassbender, which I probably mispronounced his name. He was one of those 300 guys, sweaty guy number 4. You'd recognize him. But anyway, just good, you know, great looking Blu-ray too. So you know, definitely track that down if you want some violent sword swinging alpha male awesomeness. So, and a great little, great villain too. I think Olga Kurylenko is the villain.
Oh, really?
And she's, yeah, and she's mean and frightening, and which is great. It's good to see a, it's good to see the terrifying female villain. So, anyway, yep, go check it out, Centurion. So, Mac, what are we doing next?
All right, why don't we take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray? You listening at home can play along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab, and from there we're going to go to the cover art gallery for November 9th. And we're just going to talk about what's coming out that interests or terrifies us.
The release of the week has to be Careers for Teens, Law Enforcement.
Nice.
Is that like for careers for teens who want to grow up, or teens currently looking for careers?
So, you know? Like hall monitors, basically.
Yeah, how come the, so, how come the police officer on the cover looks like he can't find his gun?
Because he's a teenager. I think he's a stupid teenager.
Oh, Mr. Carruthers.
Okay.
Was that Blast from the Past that looks like it's got the Seinfeld logo? It's like just up from.
That's true. It's the old that Brendan Fraser movie that came out forever ago.
Is it okay?
Yeah, it was stuck in a bunker or something, right. And he came. Whatever. Yeah. The pre Furry Vengeance Brendan Fraser, which I'm not entirely sure is better than the post Furry Vengeance.
It sounds like he's still got
that it. That the watermark of his career is Furry Vengeance.
That's right.
That's going on his tombstone. Like it or not.
We got the new Mystery Science Theater there with the gypsy figures. Yes. We talked about that a little last week.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, it's funny. They got three things that I reviewed or am reviewing coming out the same week. We got that, and then Ramona and Beezus, which I didn't talk about last week, but it's actually a pretty sweet little family film. It's got.
I read that. For some reason, I read those Ramona books growing up. I loved them.
Yeah, totally. I think kind of everyone did, and it's a nice adaptation. It kind of it doesn't slavishly follow any single book, but it's kind of captures the spirit in a good way. You know, it's a family movie, so it's predictable, but you know, the casting is pretty nice, and you know, the child actor works. She's not annoying. She's not, you know, great.
Selena Gomez, right? Is that who it is?
No, she's
a big Disney star, right?
She is, but she plays Beezus, the older sister. The focus is really on Ramona.
Is it? Oh, nice.
In this it is, which is funny. I guess in the books, the book was actually called Beezus and Ramona, and the focus was on Beezus. And they switched it around for the movie, so it's
revisionist
changes. Yeah, a little bit. I don't want to scare
Ramona's
you off, David.
The star. She's the funny one. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want you going to BeesCon and complaining to all your friends, Dave.
They never invited me back to BeesCon since the incident.
Oh, yeah, the incident. I forgot about that.
So let me ask you this. Is an Encyclopedia Brown movie on the way?
Oh, man. Did they try that as like a TV?
There was an HBO. I think there was like an HBO movie.
Yeah, there was
a show.
Years ago, there was a made-for-TV movie one that was just awful. Yeah.
Maybe it was an HBO. I don't know.
I'd love to see that, although it would be kind of short and the ending would not be all that. It'd be like, oh, you could tell that he was the bad guy because he ate blueberry.
The mug was hot.
Okay. Right, exactly. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe if you did it as like a young Sherlock Holmes type of thing and you had Encyclopedia Brown taking on Egyptian cultists, then
that's true. He's got his Bugs Meany is behind the abduction of women, virgins, and sacrifice. Yeah. Bugs!
That'd be nice.
But we've also then your third one there is Scott Pilgrim, of course.
Oh, yeah, Scott Pilgrim.
Which also has a Ramona in it, so that's two Ramonas for you.
Oh, wow. Wow. It's like a theme.
It is.
Trying to figure out how to tie Mystery Science Theater back into either of those and cannot do it.
Let's see. Ooh, The Golden Girls. Is that the complete series and the handbag? You see that? Wow. $121.
Imagine going to the store and walking that up to the counter.
Yikes. The Walk of the Emasculated. Whose doorstep will that land on? That's the question.
So you guys know anything about this movie, The Death of a Snowman? The cover art.
It's apparently a South African exploitation classic.
There you go. Yeah, It doesn't have any snowmen on the cover, but it does have a bunch of bad looking dudes with guns.
Yeah. There's a little plane flying in the background. Yeah. I don't. I've been burned too many times by these DVDs with the awesome, you know, with the awesome covers. Like the only one that they look so great when they put them in, they're just lethally boring, mm-hmm. You know. So, you know, Stunt Rock was the only one that lived up to its cover.
Of course, we have the fifth season of Doctor Who. That's the new Doctor Who, the 11th Doctor, as it were.
Oh, he's the bow tie Doctor.
Yes, he's the new one. Yeah. I enjoyed this season. I thought it was really, really good. The new guy, Matt Smith, I thought he did a great job.
All right. Well, lots to choose from. Support the site. Buy some DVDs from this cover gallery, and we'd be grateful. But right now, inadvertently sleazy-sounding DVD release of the week. Eric?
Three and out.
That's good. Mac? This is a tough week, by the way.
Yeah, let's see. How about Locked Down?
I actually have reviewed that movie, and it sucks. And for me, I'm going to go right underneath, Men of a Certain Age. okay, so let's go on to our ambush topics, our final phase of the Friday Filibuster, where we've just got random topics to throw at each other. And I'll go first because it's still in my mind. I didn't write it down. I probably forget it. So movies with sports that aren't the big four sports. So, you know, that feature sports prominently, but it's not baseball, hockey, basketball, or football.
Does Over the Top count?
Oh, there you go. Have you? I've never seen Over the Top.
Yeah, actually, okay, neither have I. But I know that it involves Sylvester Stallone.
It is available on Netflix for streaming. Ooh, so maybe nice.
Hold on, I'm going to watch it right now.
I actually have seen it. It's about arm wrestling, but mostly it's about father-son bonding with some arm wrestling in it.
Awesome. Yeah, is there like a shocking lack of arm wrestling? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's, you know, they're Stallone and his son, they're on their way to the arm wrestling tournament, and so it's like a road trip movie. And,
oh, so
you know,
it's like, the Wizard. It's like The Wizard for arm wrestling.
That's right. Too bad they never did an arm wrestling game with a power glove. You know,
oh, yeah.
That would have been really boring.
Yeah, they could do it with the just like nothing else worked with the power glove.
They could do it with I guess any of the three big consoles at the moment. They all have motion controls now, so why not? Arm wrestling, Over the Top, licensed XBLA game for Kinect.
All right. Well, I don't know who took that. Did you both share Over the Top for your
episode? Okay, for me, I just a few weeks ago, I talked about Kansas City Bomber, and I don't know, there's not much more to say about that one. So now I've got to think of another one. Hey, how about Caddyshack, and we'll go with golf.
All right, good.
Nice.
And, yes, Bill Murray versus the Gopher, comedy gold right there.
Excellent, absolutely. I'm going to, let's see, go with Back to School. Remember the Rodney Dangerfield?
Oh, of course. I love that.
Caddyshack, Rodney Dangerfield. There's some connection right there. And the big sport there is diving,
yes.
Which apparently has this huge following. I mean, diving just packs the stands at the school. I was always shocked by that. So, I mean, like the stands are filled. Like thousands of fans show up to watch men's diving. So
yeah, it's funny because that's a sport that usually gets no respect.
It doesn't. That does nice.
Am I right?
That's good. That's good.
Because of Caddyshack.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And it features. I gotcha.
I don't know.
It also features. I don't know. The only other role I've seen. You know, what's his face? The douchebag from Karate Kid. I can't remember. You know.
Johnny or the
Johnny.
Johnny. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. His name was Johnny Johnson. Relative of yours, I think.
Guys.
I don't know.
What's Rodney do at the end? What's it called? The triple...
Triple Lindy.
Triple Lindy. I was right. I was going
to
guess.
That's right. Thanks to a lot of blue screen work. He's able to pull it off. They installed an extra board for the Triple Lindy. Right. And then I recall that the gathered crowd, they were such savvy diving fanatics. They all knew what it was, and they were gasping and
shocked. It's because the... Rodney Thornton Mellon, he had been a champion diver in his youth, and they all knew that because of his celebrity status. Yeah.
Absolutely. Those are some hardcore diving aficionados.
That's a really funny movie, actually.
It is, actually. It is a funny, like, a generally funny movie. Pretty dated, like, really, really dated. And, you know, like, it's just a great 80s, you know, relic, but good stuff. All right. Eric, what do you got?
All right. Fake charities.
Got to go with the Human Fund in Seinfeld. George, desperate, you know, he catches on that, you know, for Christmas presents, people are making donations in his name to a charity. So he makes up the Human Fund. Just, you know, a gift has been given in your name for the Human Fund. I forget how it blows up in his face, but I'm sure it does.
You know, I remember the joke, but I can't remember what show it was from. It was from some late 80s sitcom, but I can't think of what show it was. I only remember the joke.
All right, let's try to all work together and solve this case.
The joke was that
for 25 cents left on a gasoline can.
the joke was that the daughter of the family had joined SOPOWL, which stood for Save Our Planet or We're Leaving.
Oh,
that was her.
I've got nothing.
Fundraising thing. What show was that?
Just the 10 of us, maybe?
Yeah, if not that, something a lot like that.
Facts of Life? Growing Pains? Mr. Belvedere?
Can't you Google that?
Maybe I can. Let me try it.
Well, while you do that, a little digression here. Speaking of which, I did review the Facts of Life Season 5.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Again, I've been pegged as the Facts of Life guy for the site, apparently. And it's just amazing to me how little comedy – it's like 50-50 maybe. 50% comedy or attempts at comedy, and then just 50% of just studio audience sitting in silence watching like a play unfold, you know. It's just this hyper drama for the last 50 minutes. I mean, I guess that's what 80s sitcoms were like, right? Well, they were just talking
– We were talking about these –
A lot of lessons, like the stuff that they – Facts of Life Season 5, they dealt with illiteracy, which is another big one in the 80s, you know, huge issue to deal with. Joe commits industrial espionage to undercut a competitor of Edna's Edibles, like another gourmet shop. She uses this, like, Amiga computer, you know, with the hard drive or the cassette recorder that's attached by, like, that – electric, you know, that tape, you know, whatever that tape was that connected computer components. She uses it to, like, break into the computer system. Let's see. We have a death in the family. We have a divorce. We have the political pressure of being on the student council. I mean, it's heavy, heavy-duty stuff.
They relied a lot in those days on the very special episode.
They did. I mean, everyone was, like, a very special episode. It was like 15 minutes at the end was straight up resolution of very special episode.
Yeah, I wonder when that
music starts playing at the appropriate moment.
I wonder when the very special episode died. You think it was like Seinfeld? Think Seinfeld killed?
I really think that was probably sound of the death knell for sure.
I mean, because if Seinfeld was on the same time as Alf, and Alf certainly had its share of very special episodes, I can only remember the one where Willie's college friend was an alcoholic, and they had to deal with that.
I remember that one. Yeah.
But
I'm gonna read you here. Let me read you a synopsis or two, okay?
Okay.
Let's see. This is episode 9, Small but Dangerous. Mrs. Garrett and the girls befriend Kelly, a fast-talking street punk, and wind up victims of her scheme to extort protection money.
Wow.
this one was as disturbing as it sounds. This is Dancing as Fast as I Can, Episode 8. Blair and Joe plan a birthday surprise for Mrs. Garrett at a male exotic dance club. Every bit as awkward and awful.
Wow.
All right, well, we totally got off. Sorry about that digression. Mac, did your research yield anything of what you were thinking?
No, but there's a guitarist who lives in France by the name of SOPOWL.
Oh, all right.
And it says here that he provided some music for the video game Gran Torino.
The video game
Gran Torino? Sorry, the movie Gran Torino.
Oh, okay.
It's like and video games, it says underneath.
All right, Eric.
All right, well, actually, I guess while we were talking, I thought of a second one. But the first one, I've been watching, actually, Parks and Recreation Season 2 on Netflix Instant Watch lately. And there was the episode Kaboom.
Yes, we were watching the same episode.
Oh, how nice, yeah. So that, excellent. I mean, I'm a little hazy because apparently Kaboom is actually a real charity that helps to build playgrounds. Right. But in the TV show, right. It definitely made it sound like it was all a practical joke to get playground to get a playground built by what I assume was a millionaire, like played by Paul Scheer, and then his next big prank was going to be building a hospital in an underprivileged part of China. They'll never know what it was. They'll never know it hit them or whatever, but so that was kind of funny. And then while we were talking, I thought of the great fake charity on Arrested Development, the TBA charity.
Oh, very good.
Money for TBA.
That's right.
To be announced.
That's or maybe's BS disease. Right?
That's right.
All right, Mac, wrap us up.
All right. Well, for this one, I'm gonna introduce the caveat that you can't pick Arrested Development for this topic because it's too obvious, right? So, other than Arrested Development, name a memorable narrator.
That's a good topic. Well, I guess, let's see, Daniel Stern in The Wonder Years, right? That was his name,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, really kind of drove that show the whole time. I still remember his last bit of narration. The series ender closes and he says, like, okay, kids, time for bed or something like that. I don't know. Which leads you to believe that he's this insane person who was in the basement just reciting this litany of episodes. So.
Well, I guess it's along the same lines in the sense that I guess it's a grown-up character looking back, but I'll go with Bob Saget on How I Met Your Mother.
Right.
He narrates a lot. He narrates a lot of that, and it's all
he does. And it's I'm always like the conceit of just telling his children these things. Like I'm always surprised the amount of graphic sexual detail he must go into.
Followed
out by. Guys.
A very open friendly.
It really is.
Yeah, here.
Here's how slutty your Aunt Robin is.
I never knew that was Bob Saget on that show.
Oh, yeah. That's right. And again, he must be insane because all the shots we see of his kids are wearing the same clothes. You know? So I think did he just park him on the couch and it's just
a marathon.
Just a marathon. Yeah.
Well, he probably just tells the stories but leaves out all the graphic sexual details, so each story lasts about 30 seconds.
That's true.
Then he can move on to the next one.
Either that or they're like cultists, you know, and they wear the same thing every day.
Yeah, that's possible as well.
Or they're holograms. Yeah. Maybe they'll be holograms in the future. There's so many ways the show could end that are probably more interesting than the way it will end.
Oh, I programmed your mother in a computer?
Something like that.
I mean, that would be quite the twist.
Maybe this all takes place in the mind of an autistic child. You know,
you mean Bob Saget?
Bob Saget looking at a snow globe and pull back.
And it's all is actually him telling the story to Deej.
Now we're dealing with like Inception.
It's a sitcom inside a sitcom inside a sitcom.
Okay.
Well, for mine, I went to. Did you guys both? Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
I went to some of my favorite episodes of Futurama when they did the anthology of interest episodes, which were like their answers to the Simpsons Halloween episodes. And there's the segments ended with this great narration from Maurice LaMarche, where he essentially not so much narrated, but just shouted. Interesting stuff. You watched it. You can't unwatch it. And he says, stay tuned for more Tales of Interest. It's a great running gag. And then whenever someone says something like boring on one of the commentaries, he'll say it on the commentary too to like get the commentary going again. So
very meta. Very
yes.
Going
I don't
to
see it. But Maurice LaMarche is the man.
Going to a movie example. I'll go with Peter Falk in The Princess Bride.
Oh, very good.
Oh, yeah. That's a classic.
Classic.
Yeah. Yeah. Very
good. Narration is not just for TV shows. They have it in movies, too.
I do have it in movies. I'm trying to think of other movies that have it, but I'm striking out here.
Fight Club is a favorite.
Fight Club, right. Yeah. The movie that hinges its whole twist on a narration is Fallen, the Denzel Washington movie.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. It's been a while.
No spoilers for me. You'll have to go Netflix that one, too, I guess. That and Over the Top. Those are on your to-do list.
Well, I've seen Fallen. I just can't remember. Maybe I'll go to Wikipedia.
There you go. All right. Well, with that, we are done with this edition of the Friday Filibuster. Thank you for tuning in. Friday Filibuster at DVDverdict.com is our email. Facebook.com/Friday Filibuster. Facebook page. And DVD Verdict, Pixel Verdict, TV Verdict, and Cinema Verdict for all your entertainment needs. Thank you to Eric and Mac. Mac, take us away.
You watched it. You can't unwatch it.
Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the 5D Filibuster.